Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And it's great to have you back as we explore another exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation here on the Science News Radio Network. We have kind of an abbreviated program today because this is pledge week for many of the local stations, and they're going to need a little time to ask for your support. So today's going to go pretty quickly. In the first bit, we're going to check in something we haven't done for a while, step into our busy newsroom, our world newsroom we have here at the Science News Radio Network, and see what news clips have been happening out there in the world since we last checked. And then we're going to visit with a guy by the name of Ethan Weibel. Ethan is a student in his second semester at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. He's majoring in mechanical engineering. He's got a pretty fascinating thing that he's going to tell us about, and that's biomass. He's taken waste, you know, things like corn cobs and wood chips and things otherwise that we might not even use, and putting it through a process called torrefaction. I'll spell that for you, T-O-R-R-E-F-A-C-T-I-O-N. And torrefaction apparently takes this waste material and makes it very similar to coal in the yield. Now, I had a bunch of questions for him, as I'm sure that you can imagine, and they're probably already going through your head, too, about cost-effectiveness and, waste and all sorts of things that that can happen to it, and why he thinks that this biomass with this torrefaction process is going to be the least bit viable. But anyway, that's coming up here in just a little bit. And of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our Fountain of Useless Information we have here on the set, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. So I want to remind you who are listening on radio that you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz, www.promiseoftomorrow.biz, and you'll hear the story online. And also, if you get a chance, plan in April 19th and 20th, to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma for the 4th Annual Green Technologies Conference. As a matter of fact, our guest today, Ethan Weibel, with his biomass stories, is going to be a featured speaker at that event. And you can find more on that at IEEEGreenTech.org. That's IEEE GreenTech, GreenTech.org. And that'll fill you in on everything that's going on with that particular show. Right at the moment, though, let's step over here to our very busy newsroom. And a little loud in here and noisy, but our correspondents post news clips that come across and hang them on our clipboard up here for us to take a look at and see if there's anything that we want to make a mention of. This is by Katie Neal, who writes for R&D Magazine, and she is quoting the current issue of Nano Letters, a leading journal on nanotechnology. Anyway, she's telling about this this graduate student, Corey Hewitt. By simply touching a small piece of power felt, it's a promising new thermoelectric device developed by a team of researchers in the Center for Nanotechnology and Molecular Materials, that this guy Hewitt has converted his body heat into an electrical current. This material apparently is comprised of tiny carbon nanotubes locked up in a flexible plastic and fibers that is made to feel like fabric. PowerFilt uses temperature differences, that is room temperature versus body temperature, for instance, to create an electrical charge. Now, Hewitt told her this is a quote, "We waste a lot of energy in the form of heat. For example, recapturing a car's energy waste could help improve fuel mileage and power the radio, the air conditioning, your navigation system," says Hewitt. And he told her that generally thermal electronics are an underdeveloped technology for harvesting energy, and yet there's so much opportunity, close quote. It seems the potential uses for PowerFilt includes lining automobile seats to boost battery power and service electrical needs, insulating pipes or collecting heat under roof tiles to lower gas or electric bills. That would be real handy for us in our homes. There's so much heat generated beneath the roof tiles and in our attics. David Carroll is director of the Center for Nanotechnology and Molecular Materials, and he says, imagine it in an emergency kit wrapped around a flashlight powering a weather radio, charging a prepaid cell phone. He says that literally just by sitting on your phone, PowerFilt could provide relief during power outages or accidents. Cost has prevented thermal electronics, of course, from being used more widely in consumer products. Currently, Hewitt is evaluating several ways to add more nanotube layers and make them even thinner to boost power output. And although there's more work to do before PowerFilt is ready for the market, he says, I imagine being able to make a jacket with a completely thermoelectric inside liner that gathers warmth from body heat while the exterior remains cold from the outside temperatures. And if the PowerFilt is efficient enough, you could potentially power an iPod, which would be great for distance runners. It's pretty cool to think about. But he believes it's definitely within reach. Currently, Wake Forest is in talks with investors to produce PowerFilt commercial. All right, well, let's get out of the newsroom, the busy newsroom right now, and step over here to our fountain of very useless information we keep here on the set, and see if we can't come up with today's query. We'll get around the coin jar here a little bit and toss in some coins, and we should be on our way.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help you?
Yes, 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 I see. Once again, throwing the coins in the fountain wakes up the spirit of the fountain. The spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. All right, oh spirit of the fountain, here's one for you. See how you do with your geography. What country is bordered by Saudi Arabia and Iraq? Now, no fear running over and looking at your atlas or your globe or something. Come on, from memory, off the top of your head, what country is bordered by both Saudi Arabia and Iraq?
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the others.
Ah, the spirit of the fountain even knows his geography. All right, the country bordered by Saudi Arabia and Iraq. If you said Syria, you're wrong. The country that's bordered by both Saudi Arabia and Iraq is Kuwait. That's right. The country of Kuwait. All right, back to our program.
Stand by.
Ethan, you're with the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, and you're majoring in mechanical engineering. What are you specializing in right at the moment?
Currently, I'm working on biomass, and our main project right now is torrefaction. Torrefaction is whenever you take biomasses, such as woods or corn cobs, we've used pecans, and what you're doing is you're heating them in an oxygen-free environment at about 200 to 300 degrees Celsius, and you're doing this from 20 minutes to an hour, and we're doing this because we're trying to get the same characteristics as coal, so that way the torrefied biomass can be used in coal factories. in the place of coal.
Okay, so we're talking about torrefaction, and that's wood chips and other waste material that you believe can be used in place of coal. Coal has got a pretty high BTU, British thermal unit. I mean, when you burn coal, you get a lot of energy out of it. How does that compare with you're using with this waste material, these wood chips and these other things with this torrefaction?
Well, we're not going to replace coal entirely. What they're trying to do is use part coal, part torrefied biomass in the factories. We're just doing this because torrefaction of the biomass is a renewable energy source, unlike coal. So we're trying to use more renewable energy sources in that place to maybe go 40% biomass, torrefied biomass, and 60% coal, and you're still coming out the same energy content. But the torrefied biomass has similar characteristics in the BTU values and grindability of coal.
Well, yeah, but I mean, this country has like hundreds of years worth of coal, and of course we're trying to get away from coal. Do you see this as a short-term replacement because it's easier to use this waste material than it is to mine coal, or what are the reasons for going to torrefaction?
Well, one of the reasons is the renewable portfolio standards, which is each state has been giving a almost like a due date of how much energy consumption they need to change to renewable energy consumption. Now, Louisiana does not have one yet, but one big part of whenever we get one, we're looking at torrefaction to replace coal, which is a non-renewable energy source, with torrefaction and torrefied biomass, which are renewable energy.
Well, how is this waste material collected? I mean, where does it come from?
It can come from just wood chips from leftover lumber mills. It can come from leftover corn cobs, just pecans, just really any sort of biomass that we can. Louisiana has a large amount of biomass, so we can just use any of it.
Well, explain to me how you make this project work. Now, what do you do? You scour the countryside, you find the corn cobs, and you find the wood chips and those sorts of things, and you gather them together, and you put them in some sort of a container or something like that, and then you fire them up, or do you have to treat them, or how does this work?
Well, pretty much you do just like you said. We've collected wood, manure, and crops, and we've just grouped them together, and on the lab scale studies, we put them in an oven that we have, a specialized oven, and we heat them for the certain time period at the certain temperatures that we're testing. And whenever we get them out, they're torrefied because of the oxygen-free environment. And we can just run the test on them to look at the BTU values and the moisture content. And we have the pilot reactor, which does the same thing, but on a large scale. Well, not large. Very large, but a mid-range scale, which is just more for how much can we do at one time.
All right, and you're getting similar then yields in BTU energy as one might get from coal. That's quite interesting. But you know, coal's pretty dirty, and we get a lot of things out of coal, not just CO2, but others. What sort of emissions are you getting from this torrefaction?
The emissions that we're getting are we're getting some alcohol and some acids coming up from this. And what we're doing is you can reuse these acids and alcohols back into the process of torrefaction.
In other words, you would send the acids and the alcohol back into the combustion chamber and burn that too? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. We would reuse it to burn the next batch of torrefied biomass. So whenever we're using the leftover acids and alcohol to torrefy the new material is exerting these, not same alcohols, same acids, but similar ones.
Well, what about carbon? What about CO2? Is it putting out as much as coal does?
It's not quite on the level of coal, but it is very similar.
Well, with our trying to cut down on
on carbon emissions, do you really see a future for torrefaction, or is this just something that is just kind of fun to do with the university?
Oh, no, sir. We really do see in the next 3 to 5 years a commercialization of torrefaction, and we have been very successful on the lab and pilot scale studies.
Okay, so using your university research, the prediction is then that commercial organizations will be taking what you've learned right there at Louisiana State University at Lafayette to make this a very commercial and useful study. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Is there anything happening in that direction right at the moment? I mean, what do you see that is encouraging you to believe these things?
Well, we have produced a small amount to an interested party, which names I will not mention, but we are in the final parts of the optimization phase, and we're looking forward to the commercialization on large-scale numbers of the torrefaction.
And all right, Ethan, I'm going to ask you to give me a wild prediction now. How long is it going to be before this is really a viable commercial enterprise?
Well, we say 3 to 5 years for it to be commercialized. So for it to be largely commercialized, I give it maybe another 2. So 4 to 7, 8 years for it to be large, very large scale.
And do you think that this is something that will be adopted by power plants, existing power plants around the country?
Yes, sir, I do.
So without the need to build new power plants that are currently burning coal, with using the process that you've developed there at Louisiana State University of Lafayette, power plants everywhere burning coal will be able to switch over to this torrefaction and cut down on the coal usage until they decide to build new power plants that maybe are gas-fired or something else. Is that right?
Yes, sir. There are only minor modifications needed to the coal power plants to make torrefaction a usable source. So it's not like you have to rebuild, like you said, for the gas and other substances. Torrefaction, you just need a minor modification in the process.
All right, well, let's get into the economies of this now. We're talking about something that puts out about the same emissions as coal in as far as carbon goes, that you can reburn some of the emissions because they're alcohol and acids that will go back in and reburn again. And so you're really kind of replacing coal with kind of a coal-like substance. But economically, I mean, what about the cost for energy yield? How does that compare with, let's say, oil?
Well, because it's unused biomass and it's leftovers, it's not going to be as expensive as coal. Like marketplace, the commercialization of it, the modifications, it's going to be expensive, but it's not going to be as expensive as it would be to go gather more oil and gases.
All right, and then what kind of leftovers do you have there after it's burned? Is there anything left over after it's burned? Because coal, you get slag and you get other stuff that's left over. What do you get when you burn this biomass?
There's a small percentage of unusable torrefied biomass, but that can be separated from the good torrefied biomass, and that's at little energy output. That takes as little process as possible.
And then can that be used what for fertilizer, like potash can be used, or what do you do with it?
We have not gone into research on what can be done with it. It can help the marketplace of Louisiana because it, in an estimation, about 5,000 more jobs can be created in Louisiana, such as the process of torrefaction, the construction of buildings, the marketplace, and it's going to save many jobs in lumber mills because some northern Louisiana lumber mills are starting to not have places to send their lumber for paper and other materials, so that will keep them in business as well. It's going to look good from the workplace perspective.
Okay, so for Louisiana, this is going to be kind of a boon as far as jobs go and that sort of thing, and good for the environment there and everything else. And, of course, this is also can migrate to other parts of the country and other parts of the world and be used in coal-fired power plants. So that's very very interesting, Ethan. Good work. And what are your plans over the next couple of years?
Are you talking about me in particular?
Yeah, I'm talking about you in particular. What's your future look like?
Well, I'm just a freshman right now in mechanical engineering, but my future is to graduate with a degree, get my PE and FE, which are engineering licenses, and then either return for a master's or go into the workforce.
Well, Ethan, thank you so much for being with us and explaining us today about what you're doing with Torrefaction. It's certainly some fascinating things, and we're going to pay close attention to see if all your predictions come true.
All right.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
You know, I'm trying to identify some of the things that just sort of excite you that if you can get paid to do them at the same time, that would just be a fantastic combination of your interests and something to help pay the bills. And so from my standpoint, I was always interested in space from a little boy. And then later in life, it was identifying the beauty of the Earth and looking at the Earth from space, and then finding out just through a number of conversations with a number of range of people, doing a lot of informational interviews to ask people what they did for a living. And as I was listening, you know, some of the people I said, wow, I want to do that. And other people I listened to, I said, you know what, that's great, but that's not for me. And so it was just a collection of all of these conversations helping me sort of understand what were the sorts of things that really interested me. And so now in the position I'm in right now, I think it's just a fantastic joy for me to be able to both look at the Earth from space, from all the satellite images that we use, looking at it from all these different perspectives. It's not just imagery of the space, that it could be sea surface temperature, sea surface height, and any number of factors. And then recognizing the fact that this can have a role for humanity in looking at good management practices and good, you know, policy-making practices. And the fact that I get to do this and I'm going to get paid for it. Lawrence Friedel, I'm the director of the Applied Sciences Program within the Earth Science Division at NASA headquarters.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
Well, this is Pledge Week for many of the local stations, so we're going to get out of here a little earlier this time. But before we do, we need to check in with a den of strangers. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the den of strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the den of strangers will we meet today?
Abraham Lincoln.
As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master. This expresses my idea of democracy. Whatever differs from this to the extent of the difference is no democracy. I never knew a man who wished to be himself a slave. Consider if you know any good thing that no man desires for himself.
Hi, Mary. Hi, Lou. Hi, Murr. Here comes the colonel.
Well, it's that time again. This is Pledge Week for many local PBS stations. And we're going to devote the next half hour to them so that they may ask for your support. Remember, it's contributions from listeners like you that keep programs like this on the air. So we're going to turn over the second half hour of this program this week so that your local stations can ask for your support. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
Waiting for you.